We'll continue with our discussion from as a crash course in Bhagavad Gita. So we have covered so far, starting with the real problems of life or search for happiness, then how to acquire real knowledge, does God exist, who is God, who am I. So we covered these various topics so far. You have any question?
Yeah. That day you told me there is a separate class for why bad things happen to people.
So that will be next week. So we have why do bad things happen to good people or vice versa. So that will be covered next week. And then we have different yoga systems. That will be week after that. So today we are going to cover, after understanding who is God, who am I. So we'll do a little bit of as a practical application. After understanding all this, what we are supposed to do. So generally the practical application whole as a big session is the last session as the end, after covering all this topic. But generally I prefer doing it in two stages, splitting it into two parts, discussing few things in between, so that we can start applying it, right? Otherwise, without understanding what we are supposed to do, just understanding the why part, not doing the how part, it's incomplete. So we'll continue with that discussion, and we'll start with the invocation prayers. So hey, whoever remembers those prayers, they can recite with me. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurakshe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay, so today we'll go a little bit into the practical application side. After understanding who is God, who we are, and what is our relationship with the Supreme Lord. Our relationship with the Supreme Lord. So we understand who is God, or God exists, and we are all living entity. We are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So the goal of life should be to serve the Supreme Lord. Like, we can understand in a little different way. We know the younger are supposed to serve the elders, right? Coming from an Indian background, at least that is inherent in the culture. The youngers are taught from the beginning to serve, to respect their elders. Now, who is the Supreme topmost elder person in the whole creation. This is the Supreme Lord. So in that capacity, the duty of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Lord. And it mentioned in the scriptures also, Jiver Savrupoi Krishner Nityadas. The original Savrupa, or the original identification of the living entity, is to serve the Supreme Lord. Serving the elders is part of the culture, and understanding Krishna, Supreme Lord, he is the most elder person, right? He is the most oldest in the whole creation. So our duty is to serve the Supreme Lord. Even Lord Ramchandra, when Lord Ram came, what did he exemplify? He exemplified serving his father, serving his parents. Even though he was asked to abandon the kingdom for 14 years, so he obeyed his parents, he served his parents, he served his father. And Lord Ram is known as Maryada Purushottam Ram, right? He shows by example, setting an example for everybody to follow, to serving the elders, serving the Supreme Lord. So our original Savrupa of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Lord. So but the question comes, how do we serve? How do we serve the Supreme Lord? So service start by following the instructions. That is the first service. Whatever instructions are given by the Supreme Lord, if we follow those instructions, that is when the service starts. So if you tell your child, you do this, but if the child doesn't follow, and child says, okay, tell me, how can I serve you? What will you say? Okay, just follow what I'm saying, right? Do this thing, that is the service. But if we don't follow what is being asked from us, then that's not service. So same way, when Supreme Lord is giving direct instruction, the best service is to follow those instructions. So Lord Krishna has given the instructions. The Bhagavad Gita is a condensed summary of all the instructions given by the Supreme Lord. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So the real religion is to follow the instructions given by God. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So that is the original dharma, to follow the instructions. Now what are those instructions? And how do we follow those instructions? So that is kind of as a practical application. Now the chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, it starts in a very nice way, where Krishna tells what are the criteria. So he says, I am giving you the most confidential knowledge. Idam tute guhyatamam parvakshami anusuyave. So he gives the criteria there. What is the criteria to understand the spiritual knowledge? Anusuyave, that you are not envious of me, that is why I am giving you this knowledge. So not envious of just the Supreme Lord, but not being envious of any other living entity also. Because Krishna is situated in everybody's heart. Right? Krishna is situated in everybody's heart as Paramatma. So it's not that, okay, I'm not envious of God, but then we carry a lot of envy towards other people. So the first criteria to understand the message, the instructions of God, is to non-envious, being non-envious. And then Krishna says, Jnana Vijnana Sahitam. This knowledge is to be understood as Jnana and Vijnana. Jnana is knowledge, Vijnana is the practical application, the realized knowledge. And that's why spiritual life, or the spiritual knowledge, is also called as a science. It's called science of self-realization. But sometimes you say, okay, how come spiritual life or the spiritual understanding could be a science? We think science is what we know as a modern technology, right? That science. What is the definition of science? We have read that in our elementary school or middle school maybe. What is the definition of science? Anybody remember? So the exact definition.
It's like you propose a hypothesis and then you do an experiment to support that.
Okay, good. So
it's like systematic study of the existence material have the entities. This is science.
Mm-hmm. So the systematic understanding of
existing material.
Existing things. So the definition, if we go with the word-to-word definition, what we understood, what is given in the dictionary, it's that body of knowledge which can be verified by experiment. Okay? So that is called science. Now, how does it apply to spiritual life? Spiritual life, spiritual understanding is not just as a theoretical knowledge. So it says that body of knowledge which can be verified, which can be experimented. So same way spiritual life, spiritual understanding, spiritual knowledge has to be practically applied. And when we practically apply that knowledge, then you understand the real essence. Then you can verify, okay, whatever is said, that's true. Whatever is said, it gives that result. But a lot of people do a theoretical understanding of Bhagavad Gita. They may claim, oh, I know all 700 shloka of Bhagavad Gita. But still there is no understanding. Because until it's practically applied, it cannot give the result. So understanding Bhagavad Gita, understanding spirituality means practically applying it. So how do we practically apply? That is, we'll discuss a little bit today. What are the instructions, basic instructions, to bring us to actual human level? Because spiritual life starts from human life. Animals cannot understand. We discussed that in the first session, right? What is the difference in humans and animals? We have the capacity to understand, who am I, what is the goal of life, why I am here, why the misery is being imposed upon me, even though I don't want them. So that is the beginning of human life. But if we live like animal, without asking these important questions, without applying these principles, then people are still at the animalistic level. So the first purpose, first level is to come to the human level. So, the great sages, they are always concerned about the welfare of all the living entities, all the human beings. 5,000 years back, there was 80,000 sages assembled in Naimisharanya, just at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, just looking at the symptoms of Kali Yuga, they decided to engage in a 1,000-year-long yajna. Those all sages were sent by Brahmaji. They sat on a Brahma's one disc and Brahma sent them. And where the disc landed, that chakra landed, that is called Naimisharanya. It's Naimish plus Aranya. Aranya means forest, Naimish means in a matter of seconds. So they arrived there in a matter of seconds in that particular area, which is called Naimisharanya. So all these 80,000 sages engaged in a long yajna. So while they were doing this yajna, one morning they saw one great personality, one very effulgent personality appearing on that scene, very peaceful, very calm. So all these sages thought, oh, we are engaged in this long yajna, and this here is this Vaishnava, he looks very sober, very calm, very peaceful. So they all approached him and they asked many questions. So they asked, the very important question was, as I said, the sages are always concerned about the welfare of others. So the question they asked is, the Kali Yuga is coming and the quality of the people will be very degraded. What can be done to elevate the people in Kali Yuga? How the people in Kali Yuga can be elevated? How they can get the ultimate benefit of life? And they said, there are many, many scriptures. Please tell us what is the essence of all these scriptures. So in journal, they started with 6 questions. So one of the questions, as I said, discussed in the last time also, one of the questions was, how the living entity can attain real happiness, real peace? What could be done to get the maximum benefit of the human life? So they started with one of this question, or describing the qualities of Kali Yuga. Prayena alp ayeshu sabhya kalu asmin yuge janaha manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hai upadrita. So it describes the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So again, this was put down in writing 5,000 years back, and it has already been proven looking at the symptoms we see all around us, it has already been proven. So what is the symptom described here? Prayena alp ayeshu sabhya kalu asmin juge jana. In the age of Kali, this is the current age, Kali Yuga. In the age of Kali, in general, people will be short-lived. The life of people will be short. Now, is that true or not? So in Satya Yuga, the duration of life, if I tell you, you will be surprised if you don't know already. In Satya Yuga, the duration of life was 100,000 years. In Dwapar Yuga, the duration of life, so in Treta Yuga, the duration of life was 10,000 years, the average duration of life. In Dwapar Yuga, the average duration of life was 1,000 years. And in Kali Yuga, especially in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the average duration of life, 100 years. And right now only 5,000 years of Kali Yuga has passed. What is the age duration, like the average age duration right now? 60 to 70 years. Nobody, maybe rarely somebody hits 100. And if somebody hits 100, they say, oh great, they celebrate birthday, it comes in a newspaper, news, everywhere, it's a big deal. Right? Somebody passed 100, crossed 100. Because people don't know what is the lifestyle used to be or duration of life used to be earlier. So the average duration right now is 60-70. Still sometime people may claim, or the medical field, medical practitioner may claim, oh, we have increased the duration of life. Anybody hear that comment? Oh, we have increased the duration of life. Now, yes, they may have increased, but what is the relative point? They may have increased relative to last 20-30 years. They may have found the solution to some diseases. But the number of solutions they found, the number of diseases is much more, which is coming up. So in Kali Yuga, the duration of life is short. People are less healthier compared to what people used to be. Even if we just look 30, 40, 50 years back, you may know your grandfather or great-grandfather. At this age of 60, 70, they will be much healthier and they could eat whatever they want. People will drink ghee in a glass. Now you put one spoon, people say, no, I'm diabetes, I'm heart problem, this problem, that problem. I cannot eat sugar. So the life duration is short, quality of life is less, the health has gone down, the memory has gone down. Memory has gone down or increased?
No.
When we were child, I remember when I was in a middle school, we used to remember all the phone numbers by heart. Anyways, there were less people had phones. So whoever had phones, we used to remember all the phone numbers. Now, how many phone numbers you remember? Maybe hardly your own number. Sometimes people have to check their phone. Oh, let me see, what is my phone number?
And why in Kali Yuga it is like this? Because of, you said, Treta Yuga there.
That is the symptom.
They made so bad mistake and now we are, we are from that only. Because we are taking birth.
So that is a cycle of four yugas. As the progression goes with the time, the qualities keep degrading. So we will discuss the four pillars of religion, how they keep decreasing. So, right, but there is a degradation, then whole cycle starts again. It's like this is a cycle. Everything is cyclic. The season is cyclic. Some people may like summer, some people may like fall, some people may like winter. But generally same way the Kali Yuga, the cycle of Yuga, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, it goes on and it again comes back. And with the passage of time, the qualities keep deteriorating.
Means earlier, whatever they keep on did more mistakes.
Right,
because it is degrading.
Yes, it's the quality of people, their behavior, their values are decreasing. Right, so the overall influence will come.
And now, we have life 60 years or 70 years. It's not our mistake. Earlier when Draupadi was, they
of course
made our mistake.
Whatever life situation you have right now, it's because of your past.
Yeah.
But right now, you can choose what you want for the future. We'll discuss more in the karma section. This, why do bad things happen to good people, or that kind of topic. We will discuss more of this in that topic. But so we were discussing the life duration has gone down, memory power has gone down. People may claim, no, we have calculator, we have iPad, we have computer, this, that, see, we have developed so many of these gadgets. But is that the symptom of increased memory or decreased memory? It's a decreased memory. Because we are relying on all those gadgets, right? We cannot remember anything with by your own memory. Earlier, people will do big calculations just in mind. Now you tell somebody, what is 7 plus 11? Oh, hold on, uncle, 1 minute. Let me get my calculator. 7 plus 11, okay, 18. What to speak of this integral parts, like the decimal numbers, even direct numbers, they need calculators to add and subtract. So all these are symptoms of, these are happening in Kali Yuga. So life duration, what is else? Manda, lazy. People in general will be lazy in Kali Yuga. Now is that true or false? But I know a lot of people, they argue, no, people are very active. People get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock they are sitting in GM office working. How they are lazy? They are working so hard. Right? Then what is this laziness? It's not lazy. So laziness, the scriptures define laziness in terms of the spiritual realization. In the matter of spiritual realization, people are lazy. They don't know what they are working for. People work for to gain money so that they can eat better, sleep better, enjoy the life. So people don't, while working all this, while working hard, they don't know what we are working for. People work to gain money, to earn food. But now, working so hard, they don't have time to eat food. They don't have time to eat breakfast. Breakfast is carry, to go, or as a, what do you call that, as a McDonald's and all that. Drive-through. Right? Bagel or coffee, they grab quickly and drive through. Because they don't have time. Lunch is carrying a sandwich in a Ziploc, just eating a bite here and there during the meetings and all. People don't have time. So people don't understand why they're working so hard. We are working hard to maintain ourselves nicely so that we can take care of the health, take care of family, but we don't have time for all those things. So people are lazy in the matter of self-realization. They don't have time. Ask somebody, okay, come for the satsang program. No, I don't have time. I'm too busy. It's like somebody may know all the traffic rules, where to stop, where to park the car, what speed to drive. People may know all those traffic rules. Somebody is driving fast on the freeway. You try to stop him. Hold on, where are you going? No, don't stop me, let me go, I'm going very fast. But where are you going? Oh, that I don't know. That is the situation. Right? We don't know where we are heading to, but we are trying to run fast. So manda, it's a laziness in the matter of self-realization. Then sumanda mateo, people are misguided. Now are people misguided or not? You take any field, either it's politics, either it's your career, either it's religion, in all fields people are misguided. Politics, some party comes, they promise, oh, we will do this. Then 50 years or 10 years, whatever is the duration, they basically fill their pockets. And then people think, oh, no, this guy did not live up to the promise, let's bring another one. So, people are misguided from political point of view. From religious point of view, are people misguided? There's so many false religion or false propaganda going on the name of religion. There may be more swamis, but less spirituality. Because people give their own philosophy, people give their own concocted ideas. Oh, you can keep doing whatever nonsense you're doing, just give some donation to my ashram and you will be all set. So that kind of preaching is going on, that kind of philosophy is going on. So people are misguided from all aspects. Then manda bhagya, people will be misfortunate. Of course, when we have all these things, short duration of life, short memory, misguided, laziness, of course people will be Mandabhagya, right? Misfortune. Another misfortune is because of the influence of Kali Yuga or all other combined factors. There are so much of miseries which are imposed upon. Either the natural calamities are increasing day by day. Isn't it? So that is misfortune. And then upadrata. People will be filled with anxiety. Are people peaceful or full with anxiety? How many of people here at least are peaceful? So people are always filled with anxiety, something or other, either worry from the past or thinking about the future. There is always anxiety going on. So those are the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So these sages are asking very valid question. People will be filled with all these qualities or misqualities. How to deliver these people? How will they be delivered? So this is how the question started. And Sutta Goswami start describing. So the most important thing which can neglect the effect of all these bad qualities or minimize the effect of all these bad qualities is to engage in Shravanam and Kirtanam, in the chanting and hearing about the glories of Supreme Lord. So that can help people deliver from this miserable condition. And that is the purpose of coming to the satsang program. That is the most important activity one can do to get rid of all these bad influences. Engaging in hearing about the pastime, hearing about the glories, and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord.
Prabhuji, this is the knowledge and from the experiment it has been proven. That's why
a lot of people have already experimented and got success. Right? So Krishna is not giving just as a theoretical knowledge.
Yeah.
That's why Krishna says, whatever this is, jnana vijnana sahitam. It's not just theoretically understood, it is practically applied. And Arjuna also confirms in 11th chapter, yes, I have heard from all these people. They have done this, they have practically understood this, and they are also agreeing with this. Asito devalo vyasa. So he give just some few examples. So I'm going to skip this.
So that's why Bhagavad Gita is a science.
Right. Not just Bhagavad Gita, so Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a proven science.
Yeah.
It's not just somebody's... Right, it's not based on imagination, somebody sitting in the caves of Himalaya just wrote something, they did not have any other work to do. So, this is a proven science, somebody has understood it, practically applied it, got the success, that's why somebody is willing to share it. So the most important activity is to hear and chant the glories of the Supreme Lord. So there is another very great sage or saint in our Vaishnava lineage, Srila Narottam Das Thakur. So he says, Manushya Janama Paila Radha Krishnana Bhaja Janya Shunya Vishkhaya. After attaining the human form of life, if somebody is not engaged in glorifying, in hearing the glories, chanting the glories of Sri Radha and Krishna, Janya Sunya Vishkhaya, he is knowingly consuming the poison. So again, what is the most important activity for human life? Again, Narottam Das Thakur is confirming here, Radha Krishna Bhaja. So glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now there is very important term used here, Vishkhaya. Vish is what we call as poison. What happens if somebody eats poison?
Die.
Somebody will die. He will destroy this body. So there are two terms used, Vish and Vishaya. Vish means poison. Somebody consume that poison and finish this body. And Vishaya is the object of sense gratification. If somebody engages, after getting human form of life, if all the purpose of human life is just trying to enjoy the senses, material sense gratification. What will that do? Not just destroy this body, but again the person has to go through that whole cycle of janam mrityu jara vyadhi, that whole cycle will keep going on and on and on. That cycle does not stop. This human form is so precious. After attaining this, if one does not utilize it properly, we waste that human form of life. Again, we will be thrown into some other lower class of species. Again, one has to evolve through different species of life. So, consuming poison destroys this one body. Consuming, engaging in vishaya, object of senses, object for sense gratification, that is more harmful, which can put us again into a lower species of life, going through all those lower cycles again. So, when Parikshit Maharaj, is the main audience for whom this whole Bhagavatam was spoken. So, when Parikshit Maharaj has heard 3/4 of Bhagavatam, so he asked Shukdev Goswami to particularly recite the pastimes of Lord Krishna, when Lord Krishna personally appeared, to narrate all those pastimes. And what did he say? What did he ask for that? He says, Nivrittrishair upagiya manat bhav oshidat shrotra manobhiramat ka uttama shloka gunanuvadat puman vrijayat vina pashuganat. Who will not like to hear, who will not like to enjoy all these transcendental pastime of the Supreme Lord, which can deliver one from the bhavasagar? Bhav oshidat shrotra manobhiramat. By hearing the pastime of the Supreme Lord, one can relieve, one can get freedom from this bhavasagar. Only person who is the killer of his own soul, who want to commit suicide, only that kind of person will not pay attention to those topics. So it's on the same lines what Narottam Das Thakur is saying. Jaane sune vish khaya. So same way here, Parikshit Maharaj is confirming that only the person who want to knowingly, unknowingly commit suicide, he will not be interested in hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which can deliver one from this cycle of bhavasagar. What is bhava? Here bhava is very important word, bhava. Bhava means to become. So we all have a called bhavarog. Bhavarog means to become diseased. Right? We become diseased, we become ill, we become old, we become born again. That is called bhavarog. So everybody is going into this bhavasagar, this bhavarog. By hearing the pastime of the Supreme Lord, one can cut down that cycle. So we already discussed this part. Now, how one can start progressing? That was the starting point. We discussed how to start. This is just again as a background, confirming the real purpose of the human life is to come to the spiritual understanding. So what is the starting point of spiritual understanding? How to live a meaningful, purposeful life? And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is the starting point at least? How we can come to at least the human form or at the level of human being? So Krishna says, I created this system. I created this Varnashram Dharma. What is this Varnashram Dharma? So it's 4 Varna and 4 Ashrama. Now when we discuss about this Varnashram, people who are not follower of Varnashram Dharma, they sometimes kind of as a blame Hinduism being as a caste system. It's not as a caste system. It's Krishna says, I created this system. It's not as a something recently somebody concocted this system. It's Krishna created this system. It's not what we know today as a caste system or jati system. What was that system which Krishna created? It's a division of the society based on 4 varnas and 4 ashramas. By following that varna and ashrama system, everybody can progress in the spiritual life. So what are these 4 varna? Brahmacharya, grahastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. These are the four divisions of human life. Leading the life by following this four system. Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So when somebody is very young, small child, he is sent to the ashram of a guru to gain knowledge, to live as a celibate, serve the guru and acquire knowledge. So first of all, everything here is referred as ashram. What is the meaning of ashram? Ashrita iti ashram, right? Somebody, where somebody is taking shelter of, that is ashram. Taking the shelter of Supreme Lord by staying in a particular system, that is ashram. You know, all the hermitage of the sages were known as ashram, right? Because in particular people will go to the ashram or hermitage of the sages to surrender, take shelter. So ashram is to taking shelter. So brahmacharya ashram, by staying in the brahmachari, as a celibate, acquiring knowledge, but ultimate purpose is to progress towards the Supreme Lord. And then grihastha, after acquiring knowledge, one can choose to stay as a celibate or one enters into the grihastha life. One marries, lives as a family, householder life. That is a grihastha ashram. Again, grihasthita ashraya, that is grihastha ashram. By staying in a family life, by staying at a house, one is still engaged in the service of the Lord. That is grihastha ashram. So again, all purpose of all the stages of life is to gradually move towards the Supreme Lord. It's not for your personal sense enjoyment. It's to progress towards the Supreme Lord. So brahmachari, grihastha, then comes vanaprastha. As the person start getting aged, the purpose of human life is to get rid of the attachments of the human life, attachment of the family life, attachment of the possessions, and surrender, submit more towards the Supreme Lord. And then finally sannyasa, one gives up everything and fully surrenders to the Supreme Lord, completely submits and without any other shelter. That is sannyasa. So that is the system of life, which is division of a human life to progress toward the Supreme Lord. Now that is varna. And same way the duties. So that is the ashrama system, and varna system is based on the physio-psychological nature. What kind of activity one will do while staying as a grihastha or vanaprastha. So one can be as a brahmana, as a kshatriya, as a vaishya or as a shudra. So these are the four divisions of varnas. So four divisions of ashrama and four divisions of varna. And Krishna says, this is created by me. Based on a person's inclination, it's not based on a birthright. Okay, Krishna clearly says, it's not based on the birthright. Okay, somebody is born to a brahmana family, as a brahmana parents, and he is by birth declared as a brahmana. No, it's not like that. It's based on the qualities acquired. Guna karma vibhagasha. That is what Krishna is mentioning. Guna karma vibhagasha. Based on one's qualities acquired and based on the activity one engages in. It's not that somebody can claim, oh, I was born in a brahmana family, but somebody may be doing the job of a shudra and still claim, oh, I am a brahmana. So it's based on the guna and karma. These divisions are created. Now, is this division only present in India or in Sanatan Dharma or in Hinduism, or this division can be seen everywhere? So Krishna says the division is brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya and shudra. Duty of brahmana is to engage in acquiring knowledge and to give knowledge. Patan patan, yajan yajan. So that is the duty of brahmana. Kshatriya, kshatatrayate iti kshatriya, who protects others from external harm, administrative class of people, that is kshatriya. Then vaishya, who engages in the cultivation of land for agriculture or business, exchanges of material, that is Vaishya, business class. Then Shudra, who does not have much intelligence, but he helps by physical labor. So laborer class of people. So that is the division of society. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, while engaging in any varna, one can live in any of these ashrama. One can be a Brahmana, live as a Brahmacharya, or Brahmana can marry and live as a Grihastha. One can be a Kshatriya, he can be a Grihastha, or he can be a Vanprastha. Like Modi ji. He is a Kshatriya as administrative class. He is a celibate, right? Or Vanprastha, he has given up his family life. So there could be any combination. But the purpose is, the overall purpose of the division is living the life based on this four varna and four ashrama. What is the ultimate purpose? To progress towards the Supreme Lord. Not just engaging in sense gratification. So householder life is not a license for enjoyment. It's not that, oh, I have a wife, I have a kids, I have family, so I just need to enjoy, take care of all these things. That is not the purpose of Grihastha life. Now in Vedic culture, there were two type of families. But now if a government chooses to do a survey, what kind of families are here? There can be many different categories of families. Right? Husband, wife living together. Maybe husband alone living, divorced. Maybe wife alone living, divorced. Maybe husband divorced and married to another one. Maybe wife divorced and married to another one. And then there are male and male living together. Female and female living together. So now there are many different categories of family system. As per the Vedic culture, their family division is basically two categories. So there are two words used in our scripture. One is Grihastha and another is Grihamedhi. What is the distinction? What is the difference in these two? Grihastha and Grihamedhi. Grihastha is Grihasthite Ashraya. Somebody is living as a householder in a family life, but surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Progressing towards the Supreme Lord. And Grihamedhi. Medhi word comes from Medha, intelligence. Whose whole intelligence is centered in the home. Grihamedhi, whose whole intelligence is centered in the family life. He has no other purpose in life, just engaged in the family. Oh, my wife, my kids, my property, this, that. I don't have any other time. So that is Grihamedhi. So the scripture says one should not fall down into the category of Grihamedhi. Live life as a Grihastha. Progress in the spiritual life. Spiritual life does not mean giving up everything, renouncing everything and then going to Himalayas. Like there is a very famous saying, right? Chodo ghar bahar, chalo Haridwar. So that happens sometimes when somebody is too much troubled with family responsibility. Then this Falgu Vairagya comes. False renunciation. Oh, let me give everything and go away. But inside, still those attachment, hankering is there. So spiritual life does not mean giving up everything. Spiritual life is utilizing everything. Engaging everybody in Krishna service. Engaging the family members, engaging your possessions in Krishna service. That is what spiritual life means. So, and earlier the word used, you know what now we can call home or house. What was the equivalent word in Sanskrit earlier? Graha is there. What people used to call their home? I still remember 30, 40 years back, like when I was in a 6th, 7th grade, 30 years back maybe. So somebody had named their house like that. Little louder.
Alayam.
Alayam, okay, Alayam is house, yes. Alayam means house, like Pustakalaya, right? Vidyalaya. So house of knowledge, house of Himalaya, house of ice, snow. So Alaya is one. The word used was Bhavan. Remember?
Yeah.
So earlier I remember outside means just opposite to my school, my friend lived, and their house name was Agarwal Bhavan.
Yeah.
People used to name their house as Bhavan. That is the Sanskrit terminology for house. What does this Bhavan mean? So, Bha in the Bhavan come from Bhagavan. While staying in the house, if God is in the center of the house, that is called Bhavan. Otherwise, if there is no Bha, that house is not Bhavan, it's just a Van, which is the place for the animals. So, this is how Sanskrit language is very amazing. Okay, each word has very nice meaning, and there are multiple meanings to each word. So, if there is no God in the house, if the life, household life is not centered around God, it's not like as a home. It's just like a forest then, where animals reside. So we don't want to live our life as an animal life. We want to live the life. We want to come after getting this human form of life. We want to live like a human. And that's what the scriptures are telling, how one should start to come to the human level. Live the life according to these principles. No, it started like that, but people have concocted it in their own way. When people started claiming it as a birthright, that's the problem start. Person may be a Sharma. Person may say, oh, I'm a Brahman, I'm born in a Brahmana family. But what does he do? He works as a Shudra, working for somebody. Right? There's no Brahmanical qualities there. Person may claim, oh, I am a Kshatriya. We come from a Rajput family. But what is person doing? Flipping burgers in a shop.
Now it is correct. What you said is correct. But if people like 100 years before, who went born, took the birth in a Brahmana family, they used to do the only this same thing.
See, coming, taking birth only, yes, when father and mother unite, okay, with the proper qualities, proper consciousness, they will attract that particular type of soul.
Yes.
But then now the new living entity, which is taking birth, they need to develop the qualities. That living entity need to be nurtured from the birth, develop in that proper atmosphere. But if somebody does not take those qualities and start doing all the nonsense things, he cannot claim himself to be that particular Brahmana or a Kshatriya.
Understood, but basically the thing is, years before, like 100 years before, whoever is a kid is Brahmana parents, so of course they don't send him for doing agriculture, they don't send him for any...
Right, so if they are developing the qualities from beginning,
yeah,
there's the child will grow up with those qualities.
So that is what used to happen
before. Right.
So then in that case, the jati means the casteism came basically from this time. That's what happens.
The earlier original system was correct because Krishna saying, I created this, and this is based on the physio-psychological nature of the person. But the problem is when people start distorting. How it started? This started like 500 years back. Slowly it started. It doesn't start all of a sudden, right? Like 30-40 years back. This whole jati system had started earlier also in some part of the India. So what was happening? A person, a child born in a Brahminical family, the father knows, oh, this person does not have any qualities. He is a low class from the qualities. But he wanted to protect him being as a Brahmana because it's my Vansha. So to just protect his thing, they started claiming it as a birthright. That, oh, he is born as a Brahmana, he is a Brahmana. So this is all the whole twisting happened.
Even Rama.
Ramanujacharya.
Ramayana story, the air like a dhobi. His caste is dhobi caste. Right? That's what
again, that's based on the work. It's not a caste. That was based on the work, not by birth. He was engaged in that particular work. So he was a shudra basically, doing the job of a washerman. So again, it was not anywhere based on birthright. It was based on in what type of work one is engaged. There may be a Brahmana, but he was engaged in a very low class work. So he was considered as a Shudra.
the casteism came only in the Kali Yuga?
Kali Yuga, mainly it started in the Kali Yuga, the whole degradation.
I think we people made casteism. According to that, only what we work based on that one. Even now what we are calling some local Shudra, if they do teaching and all, they may be, they are like Brahma. As per this one.
Not a mundane teaching, spiritual teaching.
But,
so now the question comes, okay, how do we apply this? The progress in spiritual life, there are yama and niyama. Right? There are do's and don'ts. Now, do's and don'ts are only in spiritual life or everywhere? It's everywhere, right? It's not like, okay, just for spiritual life, you reject this thing and then you apply these things. So if somebody wants to be a good citizen, there are some rules, okay, you should not do these things, and then you should do these things. If you want to be a good citizen, you should follow all the rules, all the laws. Yes. You should follow the traffic rules, you should follow all the state rules. Right? Should not engage in stealing, destroying the property of the state, property of the government, this, there. So there are don'ts and do's. Pay your taxes properly on time. Pay your utility bills on time, all that. So there is don'ts and do's. So same way in spiritual life, there are do's and don'ts. Called yama and niyama. Yama means don'ts. Niyama means do's. Now, if somebody wants to be a good citizen, it does not mean somebody has to put on a, everybody has to put on a police uniform. A good citizen doesn't necessarily mean everybody has to become a police officer. The same way, when we want to progress in spiritual life, doesn't mean everybody has to put saffron robes, quit the home, quit family, go to Himalayas, forest and all that. Spiritual life means wherever we are situated, in whatever ashram one is situated, either as a brahmachari or a grihastha or a vanaprastha or a sannyasi, one can progress towards the Supreme Lord. Not necessarily has to give up everything. So to do those, what are those yama and niyama here? We will just briefly discuss few yama and niyama. It's a condensed summary. There are many big lists of do's and don'ts. We'll focus on a short list. So what are the don'ts here? So we'll start based on the four pillars of dharma. So dharma is standing on four pillars. So in Satya Yuga, all the four pillars are very strong. And as the time keep passing, the qualities deteriorate, as we discussed in the beginning. So the leg of dharma, one by one it's breaking, all these pillars. So in Kali Yuga, right now only one pillar is there, which is also shaking. So how we can make those four pillars strong? What are those four pillars, first of all? So the four pillar of dharma is tapasya, daya, cleanliness, what do you call that as a, and then truthfulness. So austerity, mercy, cleanliness, truthfulness. These are the four pillars of dharma. So if these pillars are not there, the dharma cannot sustain. So when Parikshit Maharaj, 5000 years back, he saw one black person in the robe of a king hitting the bull of dharma. The three legs of the bull was broken. Which was it signifying? Which was it representing? The dharma, bull was representing the dharma with three legs broken. Only one leg left, which is also he is trying to break. And that person is nothing but the personality of Kali. A manifestation of Kali who is trying to break the pillars of dharma by imposing all the bad qualities. So that's why these are the four pillars. Austerity. Austerity means? Anybody, any guesses? What is austerity means? Austerity, the word is tapasya. Right? So what is tapasya means here in Kali Yuga? So doing some certain, following certain vows to maintain your principles. How the austerity is broken. So there are four regulative principles which come from these four pillars of dharma. So one principle is called no intoxication, which relates with austerity. Because if somebody is intoxicated, one cannot engage in austerity. Getting up early in the morning to engage in your sadhana, that is also austerity, right? Today people want to get up at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it is. Nobody want to get up early in the morning. So getting up early in the morning also is austerity. Observing some fasting on a specific days, like Ekadashi fasting, it's austerity. Nobody want to quit eating nice food stuff. Everybody want to enjoy pizza, burger, samosa, kachori. So giving up those food for a higher purpose is austerity. Now how is austerity destroyed? When somebody engages in intoxication. Because somebody who is intoxicated, he cannot get up early in the morning. Have you seen any intoxicated person, drunk person, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and telling, okay, where is temple? It may be somebody didn't sleep at all, was drinking all night. That's why he was awake till 4 o'clock. But generally, you will not find any drunk person trying to do austerity. So, austerity. Then second one, cleanliness. Observing cleanliness. Now, that is a mode of Kali Yuga, mode of the ignorance is so heavy, it's hard to find cleanliness all around us. So there is a cleanliness, internal cleanliness and external cleanliness. External cleanliness means, okay, you clean your body, keep your external environment clean. Internal cleanliness is cleaning your mind, cleaning your heart. Our mind, our heart is so impure. So that's both external and internal cleaning. We don't find what to speak of internal cleaning, that's far, far away. It's hard to maintain external cleanliness also. Now it's all era of deodorants and perfumes. That's a big industry, right? Nobody wants to take bath in the morning, just put some deodorant, some perfume. People will be smelling so fragrant in office. You go to any conference room, so much smell there, perfume smell. But in reality, they might not have even taken bath. So people rely on all these shortcuts. So cleanliness, there is no external cleanliness. And internal cleanliness, there is so much dust in the mind. If we write down all our thoughts from the morning to evening, we ourselves will become ashamed. What kind of thoughts coming in me? So that is another pillar of religion. If we want to have our religious life strong, spiritual life strong, we need to follow this principle of cleanliness. Having our external environment clean as well as our internal cleanliness. How the internal cleanliness comes? Of course, when you engage in some spiritual activities that purify. To engage in spiritual activity, of course, you will try to maintain your external also clean. We are taught from very early age, right? If you go to temple or engage in your spiritual activity, doing some arati, you have to take bath. So automatically that cleanliness comes. And it purifies internally also. The third principle is mercy, daya. So people's temper is decreasing day by day, isn't it? There is no sense of mercy on others or forgiveness to others. People are becoming more and more short-tempered. Now to maintain this pillar of religion, daya, mercy is very important pillar. How does it relates to? If somebody cannot have mercy on others, we cannot expect mercy on ourselves. So if we want mercy, we need to show mercy. How mercy is destroyed? When somebody engages in slaughtering other animals for the satisfaction of this 6-inch tongue. So it said, for the satisfaction of the 6-inch tongue, people are ready to kill a 6-foot animal. Right? Just for the satisfaction of the small 6-inch tongue. But is there really a need to kill that animal to fill our belly? So there is many foodstuff provided, grains and fruits and vegetables. Which is the right food? And all the scripture of the world, not just the Vedic scripture, actually all the scriptures of the world point towards vegetarian diet. Because engaging in a non-veg diet makes the heart hard. It destroys the principle of mercy. People claim so much of this animal right and all that. Right? People make a big fuss out of, oh, animal right. They need to take care of this, need to protect animals. And then in the dinner, they may have another animal on their plate. That's a hypocrisy. So if we really want to show mercy, if we really want to fight for others' right, it has to start from us. It's not just as a verbal thing. We have to practically apply that. And as long as there is no mercy in the heart, heart is so hard, there cannot be spiritual enlightenment in the heart. And then the fourth principle is truthfulness. Now truthfulness, everybody may say, oh yeah, I am a very truthful person. Sometimes people say, oh, I don't lie in the temple. Bhagawan ke aage kya jhoot bolna? Achha, to parking lot mein chale gaya. There you can tell a lie. Ultimately, God is everywhere. Yes, He is personally present in the temple also, but eventually He is present everywhere. So truthfulness is another principle which can destroy spiritual life. That is the only principle which is, to some extent, intact in Kali Yuga. And people are trying to break that principle also. How this principle is broken? When somebody engages in all speculative type of business, gambling, that destroys the principle of truthfulness. Because to engage in any speculative kind of business, one has to tell lie. Right? This stock exchange and this gambling business, any kind of speculative business, that destroys the principle of truthfulness. So these are the four principles. To maintain these four pillars of dharma, that's why the four principles given. So these are the yama. Don't engage in intoxication. Don't engage in animal killing. Don't engage in the gambling sort of business. Don't engage in illicit relation. Because illicit relation destroys cleanliness. Right? When people have illicit affairs, illicit relation, that destroy internal cleanliness as well as external cleanliness. So the four don'ts are no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit relation. So these are the yama. Now what are the niyama? So this is again very brief. So if we start actually applying these, that is the starting point for spiritual life. It's not that by applying these four principles, one has become a very elevated spiritual person. It is to bring us to the human level of life. One Srila Prabhupada, in the very beginning, when he established this movement, the people who came, earlier they were doing all sort of nonsense things, right? Engaging in illicit relation, gambling, meat eating, intoxication. So, slowly, after engaging in this process, just chanting of the holy name, hearing the holy name, they gave up these principles, all these bad qualities, bad activities. And one devotee, one person came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, now I've become very advanced. Will you give me diksha? Will you give me initiation? I have stopped engaging into meat eating, illicit relation, intoxication and all that. Prabhupada said, it's not that you have become a very advanced. It's just now you have become a human. Now it's the starting of the human life. That is the starting point to progress in spiritual life. So once we come to that level, what are the practice we can do? Some people may be thinking, last few weeks it was okay. Now it's becoming too much. We are giving too much tension now. So we should not treat it as a restriction. There is a difference in restriction and regulation. There is a difference in restriction versus discipline. How many of you care about your child being disciplined? Everybody want to raise hands? Whoever want to have their kids disciplined? But now if your child comes and say, oh, no, you are putting this restriction on me, this restriction on me. Now is that restriction? It's for their betterment, right? It's for their good. We are trying to impose certain things. Just a small thing. Think about a very small thing. If you force them to brush twice a day, child may think, oh, it's a restriction. Why are you forcing me to brush? Let me go sleep. Why you are forcing me to brush in the night? Now, that's not a restriction. That's for their good and to discipline them. The same way the scriptures are giving all these regulations, these principles, not as a restriction, as a discipline, so that we can utilize this human form of life properly and get the benefit, maximum benefit out of it. Otherwise, this human life will be the reason for us to again fall back. For example, now there's a Murkatt money. Anybody has heard the name of Murkatt money? It's a very valuable gem. How somebody developed that Murkatt money? Even if it's a monkey can develop a Murkatt money. If a monkey lives a very austere life, very as a celibate, he develops a Murkatt money. But now, if somebody has got that Murkatt money, but you are using that Murkatt money to clean the toilet, is that the right use for that Murkatt money? That's a waste of that. So same way the human form of life, we have acquired this human form of life after so much of trouble, one has got this valuable human life. Engaging in all those nonsense activities is like utilizing Murkatt money to clean the toilets. If we utilize this human form of life just for all those nonsense activities. So these principles are given in scriptures to bring us to the human level so that we can progress, get the maximum benefit out of this. So we should not treat this as a restriction, but for our betterment as the principles of discipline. So after understanding this, now what are the do's? We did the don'ts. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. So what are the basic do's here? So I'm going to give you 4 vitamins. People these days eat a lot of vitamins, right? You go to doctor for medical exam. Doctor asks, okay, are you eating some supplements, vitamins? They want to start your vitamin supplement diet. So if we take all these vitamins, we don't have to take those unnecessary vitamins. So what are these vitamins? 4 vitamins. Vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C and vitamin D. So these 4 vitamins, A, B, C, D of spiritual life. Vitamin A, association of the devotees. Staying in the proper association. So there is a very famous saying, right? Who was that author? You show me who your friends are, I will show you who you are. Heard of it? So, it depends what association we keep, we become like that. Everybody, all the parents want to protect their kids. With whom they associate, who are their friends. Why? Because everybody knows the danger of association, danger of wrong association. And same way there is benefit of right association. So association means keeping in a proper association. That's why this is a weekly satsang program. So we come into that association. In the association we hear about the Supreme Lord. We engage in the spiritual activities. And that charges us for the rest of the week. Like you charge your phone every night. If you don't charge your phone, next day it will not work. The same way we need to come into the right association to charge our battery. So we can stay protected towards all the nonsense things which go on in the world. So staying in the right association, vitamin A. Vitamin B, books. No, not reading Harry Potter and all that nonsense books. Reading the spiritual books. Science of Self-Realization. Discovery of Yourself. Higher Taste. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are the books, spiritual books, we need to read. Now the book reading is not that, okay, we just come to the satsang program, 1 hour, we hear nice pravachan and then, okay, all done. We'll see next week. We should try to engage in book reading on a daily basis. It could be 10-15 minutes, not have to be like 2 hours. Just reading 10-15 minutes, reading one shloka from Bhagavad Gita every day, if not more at least. Just reading one shloka from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. So book reading is very important, because coming to the physical association, that's good. Books is a medium of a passive association. When you're reading the book, you're associating through the books, right? You're associating with the writer of the book. You're associating with the characters within that book, in the spiritual books. There are so many pastimes which describe the stories of the Supreme Lord, His pastimes, and so much of the stories of the devotees of the Lord. How they did, what activities they did. So reading the books is a very essential principle to progress in spiritual life. Then vitamin C, chanting of the holy name. Now this chanting of the holy name, sound vibration, is very important to cleanse our heart. We have discussed it earlier also. The chanting of the holy name, this mind is very impure. So many bad thoughts and mind is wandering here and there all the time. Manatrayate iti mantra. How we can pacify the mind? By chanting of the holy name. And for Kali Yuga, the specifically recommended mantra, Harer nama, harer nama, harer nama, eva kevalam, kalau nasteva, 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 gatir anyatha. So in Kali Yuga, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Stress 3 times. As we say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Why it's said 3 times? When it comes to the spiritual practice, any this thing, you say, right? Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Anybody know what is the significance? Why it said 3 times? So there are 3-fold miseries we discussed in the first session. Adhyatmika Kalesh, Adhi Bhautika Kalesh, Adhi Atmika Kalesh. When you are saying Om Shanti, you are requesting to pacify one type of misery. Second Om Shanti, second type of misery. Third Om Shanti, you are specifying, requesting for the third type, pacifying the third type of misery. So Traitrap, it's called Traitrap, 3-fold miseries. To pacify all these different type of miseries. So same way here it is stressed 3 times. Kalau nasteva 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 gatir anyata. There is no method other than this for deliverance. What is that? Harer nama, harer nama, harer nama. Chanting the holy name of Hari, chanting the holy name of Hari, chanting the holy name of Hari. And one can say, okay, there are many names of God. I can say Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Jai Om Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. What mantra should I chant? So Kali Santarana Upanishad again specifically mentions, what is that mantra which is recommended for Kali Yuga? And it's called Mahamantra. So it specifically full mentions this Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Iti Shochkam Nama Nam, Kali Kalmashah Nashanam. So this mantra, which is made of 16 syllables, 16 Shabda. Okay, not 16 alphabets, 16 Shabda. So what are these 16 words? If you count this Mahamantra, there are 16 words, right? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So there are 16 words. Iti Shodhkam, Nama Nam, Kali Kalmashah, Nashanam. It can destroy all the ill effects of Kali Yuga. So who want to destroy all the bad influences? Everybody want to destroy the bad influence of the Kali Yuga? You know. So this is the Mahamantra recommended. So we suggest or request everybody to take to this chanting of the Mahamantra. And there's no hard and fast rule to how to chant. You can chant in the morning, afternoon, evening. You can stand, walk and chant, or you can sit down and chant. So in the beginning there are no very hard and fast rule, and we chant on the beads also, okay, Japamala. So in the Japamala there are 108 motis. So on each manka, on each bead, you chant the Mahamantra, one full mantra, and then move on to the next. So one should chant this Mahamantra at least 108 times. As the example I gave, right, how to pacify the mind. This example of the businessman. Genie. This mind is like a genie. Keep going up and down on that bamboo. The same way, if you keep chanting round and round on this Japamala, which is 108 times, we can pacify the mind. Mind will try to run here and there. Chanchalam hi manah Krishna. Arjuna also mentioned that in Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna said, yes, it's chanchala, it's very strong, very powerful, very obstinate. But it can be pacified by abhyasa. With the practice, it can be pacified. Wherever mind try to run away, at least if you understand, yes, mind is running away, half battle is won. But the problem is we even don't know my mind is going here and there. So when you know mind is going away, yes, try to bring it back. Let me not think about that. That is later. Let me focus on chanting. Let me focus on the Mahamantra. So chanting of the holy name, that is vitamin C. Vitamin D. Diet. Prasad. Everybody want to eat nice food. Yes, there is no restriction in eating. Eat whatever you like. But how one should do that? By first offering it to the Supreme Lord. And when you offer first it to the Lord, that is called bhoga. Bhoga is which is for the enjoyment of the Supreme Lord. And once the Supreme Lord has tasted it, what you get back is called prasad. And this prasad has immense power. It can cleanse the heart. So, whatever we eat, we should develop that habit of cooking that bhoga in a proper consciousness. When you cook the food, your consciousness goes in the food. Okay? There's another saying, you become what you eat. Jaisa anna vaisa man. So, whatever we eat, that affects our consciousness. Now, if somebody is cooking that food in a very grudging mood, you will also get that feeling. When you eat that food, you will get that feeling. You will have a lot of anxiety. If somebody is thinking about all the illicit relations while cooking that food, one get that consciousness. All those negative thoughts start coming. If somebody is in a very fighting mood, say somebody has a fight, big fight, and after that cooking food in a that kind of mentality that enters into the food, that consciousness, and it affects your consciousness. So whatever food we eat outside in the restaurant and everything, that consciousness affects your consciousness. That's why the food, if it's cooked at home in a very sattvic way, in a proper consciousness, if while cooking the food your consciousness is, oh, I'm cooking it for Krishna, I'm cooking it to offer it to the Lord, so your whole consciousness is concentrated in that. That enters into the food. And when it is offered to the Lord, His mercy enters into that. And when you eat that prasad, that whole consciousness and the mercy of the Lord comes inside. Which helps in develop the right consciousness, right intelligence. So if you are concerned about your child's health, if you are concerned about your child's intelligence, if you are concerned about your child being influenced of all these negative things, the first and foremost thing you can do is cook food in a very proper consciousness, offer it to the Lord and feed your child only prasad. If the child is eating the prasad from very beginning, very young age, and grows like that, he will develop all the good qualities. So today we see so much problem going on, right? People don't want to live with their parents. There's so much fight going on. Nobody wants to tolerate each other. Why is that? Because of all these negative influences. Earlier, there was no system of restaurant food. Do you know that? Till 50 years back in India, there was no system of restaurant. There was only dharamshala, where whoever goes there, they get free food. Even in the Vrindavan, if you go to Vrindavan today also, you knock onto any Brajvasi's home, they will give you food. Without asking who you are, from where you came, they will provide food. That was the culture, that is our Vedic culture. The food was never sold. Food was always given in charity. And the grihastha's responsibility, the duty of grihastha, it is mentioned in the scripture, householder life, duty was, when somebody first cooked the food offered to the Lord, he should go outside of his house and shout three times, is there anybody hungry who has not taken food? Please come, eat food. And then he should eat the food. That was the system. So Vedic culture was so powerful. So these are the four vitamins: association, books, chanting, diet. And how we can start, at least to begin with, we can start with the chanting of holy name. There is no cost involved. There is nobody asking you to pay any money. It's free of cost, just chant the holy name. So I humbly request everybody, if you are not doing it right now, at least start chanting one round of this Maha Mantra. 108 times. It takes only 7 to 8 minutes. Spending 7 to 8 minutes for yourself is not a big price, is it? So, please take to this process of chanting the holy name. At least start taking vitamin C. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, we'll stop here. If anybody has any questions. So, we discussed very briefly about the practical application. Some don'ts and some do's. If we can at least apply these, that is a guaranteed method of progressing in spiritual life. So, okay, go ahead.
You said Satya Yoga, Trapa Yoga, Treta Yoga. In that period also, the people like believe Krishna as the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
Supreme Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you said there are some Purana, like four Purana, I don't know, Bhagavatam and...
There are 18 Puranas.
18 Puranas. And Bhagavatam is the first Purana.
Bhagavatam is the ultimate compilation, the ultimate ripened compilation. Fruit of all,
okay,
the Puranas.
That also says again, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And if you see in India, why demigods are more influenced than Krishna? Why? Because we see, if you see from Satya Yoga,
mm-hmm.
if Krishna is Supreme Lord, then why it is not Supreme Lord influenced more in India? Why
okay, so
demigods are influenced?
Krishna himself says why he created the demigods also. Because people in general has the desire to enjoy materialistic things. So all this system has been created. Okay, you want this enjoyment? Take to this process. Worship this particular deity, you will get your desires fulfilled. So people who are less intelligent, who want to just enjoy this materialistic life, they go to various Devi Devatas and get their requirements fulfilled. So Krishna says in 3rd chapter that I created all the human beings and all the Devi Devatas in the beginning. And I created this process. One should at least live a dharmic life. If somebody is going to the Devi Devatas, at least he is recognizing the higher authority. Okay? So he is leading a pious life at least. So slowly, slowly he will come to the right understanding that, oh, whatever I am doing, I am still living in this material world. I can get my temporary desires fulfilled, but it's temporary. It's not going to get me out of this cycle. So people in the Vedas, it's mentioned that people can worship various Devi Devatas and fulfill their material needs. Slowly, slowly they will come to the senses, why I should go to the smaller temporary things? Let me go to the higher things. But below that is Vikarmi, who do not accept the authority, anybody's authority, who do not want to accept even approach the Devi Devatas. They want to live a atheistic life. So this system is not wrong. It's a slow, gradual progression. At least somebody is following Devi Devatas, he will slowly, slowly come to the higher principle. Because the Devi Devatas themselves are the devotees of the Supreme Lord. If somebody sincerely worship a Devi Devata, they will give him the intelligence that, okay, you are worshipping me, that's okay, I can fulfill your needs. But ultimately, you should go to the Supreme Lord.
But do not get that problem. Here, satsang, then I came to know Krishna is Supreme Lord. If I don't come here...
So that's again Sukriti, right? Once somebody has... So who sent you here? You had some Sukriti gained. How you gained that Sukriti? Maybe following that same system. Worshipping particular Devi Devata, at least you had that faith. And slowly, slowly that Sukriti developed. And Krishna makes arrangement through various ways to bring him into a proper understanding. Krishna has many ways, right? He can make arrangement to bring into somebody to that particular atmosphere in that where he can understand higher principle. So somebody right now may be following a particular system, particular dharma, because his understanding level, his inclination is that. If his desire increases to understand better, he will be put into a place where he can understand more. So it's always a gradual progression. If somebody develops the desire to understand higher, Krishna makes arrangement. Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hriday shanivashto, mattah samritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everybody's heart. From me comes intelligence, remembrance and forgetfulness. If somebody is willing to forget me, I make arrangement. Okay, you want to enjoy by yourself, you don't want to care for me, I give you facility, you try to enjoy. And if you want to understand me, I make arrangement, I give you the remembrance, I make the arrangement to bring you into that atmosphere. So it's not our individual effort why I came here. Behind that is Krishna's hand. And why Krishna gave that mercy? Because I did something right in the past. I had some faith, some belief. Maybe I worship particular Devi Devata who gave me higher intelligence to bring me into this atmosphere.
Another thing is, because Krishna says, never all the time I was not there.
Right.
So we are all was there in all yugas. Not only Kaliyuga in this situation. We may be
in Satyuga when Lord Ram was there. We may be a tree or something that time.
Yeah, but that we don't remember. Now we are in this one, we can remember.
Right.
That's why I'm asking.
So that also is Krishna's mercy on us, that why we cannot remember that. Forgetfulness. Krishna gives that forgetfulness also for some purpose. Sometimes people argue, oh, why Krishna did not give me the remembrance so that I can remember my past lives. I know, okay, I did something wrong. So now I should not do those things. But if Krishna gave you the remembrance for all those things, we will be so much in trouble remembering all those things, bad things which happened with us or what we did. We will not be able to do anything. That's also again one of Krishna's mercy, that he gives us the forgetfulness. And this is Krishna's mercy, he gives us remembrance also. When you sleep in the night, you forget everything. That is like a dead body. When you get up in the morning, sometimes it happens you don't remember anything. And then slowly, slowly you start remembering, oh, I need to do this, I need to go to work. Right? You start getting all those thoughts, oh, I need to do this task today, that task. So who is giving that remembrance? If Krishna chooses, he can erase all your memory. Gone. Finish case. But he gives you the remembrance. So we should not treat it as our self-endeavor. Why I came into this circumstance. It's definitely Krishna's hand behind that, who brought us into this. And we should be thankful for that and make sure now we utilize it properly. We don't miss this opportunity. Any other questions? No questions?
No.
Any questions from Mataji's? See, as I keep telling that, asking questions is very important. Don't keep anything hidden in your heart. Doubts lead to, doubts are like the demons. If the doubts grow, they can destroy everything. The start of human life is Athato Brahma Jigyasa. One should inquire. So if you have any question, we should inquire. Ask those questions. That is the first step toward making progress. Okay, thank you. So we'll stop here. We'll do Narsim prayer.